There we go. All right, we're continuing back in the book of Matthew. We're on we're in Matthew chapter 23. Now, here he's going to go against eight bad teachings going on in the synagogues, in the temple. That's really his concern here. That's what Jesus is talking about. And he says, you know, woe to you, O Pharisees, who do this. Those of you who do X, Y, Z, A, B, C, right, through this list of eight things. And, you know, we see people hearing woe later on, and we get kind of more of a context of what's it really mean when Jesus is saying woe to you, right? So we go back into Jude 10 to 13. He says, but these people disparage all the things they do not understand, and all the things that they know by instinct, like unreasoning animals. By these things they are destroyed. Woe to them, right? You're destroyed. Woe to you. So when Jesus is saying, hey, guys, woe to you, O Pharisees, think of this, right? That they're destroyed, right? For they have gone the way of Cain. Well, we kind of know the story of Cain and Abel, right? They've gone the way of Cain. And probably not a good way to go.
And for pay, they have given themselves up to the error of Balaam, right?
Balaam is trying to be like, hey, no, guys, you don't want to go there. You don't want to go there. God's like, you want to go there? He's like, no, we don't want to go there, right? And then a donkey has to talk to him.
Right? And perished in the rebellion of Korah, right? These are the ones, right? These people,
woe to them.
These people are the ones who are hidden reefs in your love feast.
So think of it like this, right? You're in the ocean, you're sailing along, you're in your boat, and you hit this shallow spot in the ocean, right? Sinks your boat, you're done. That's called a reef, right? These are the hidden reefs at your love feasts. These are the people among you.
They're here, they're saying stupid things, right? They're saying things that are not biblical. They're saying things that were not preached by Jesus. When they feast with you without fear, they're not worried about you, right? You're not going to call them out, right?
And we're going to see that, you know, this is the same thing that was going on with the Pharisees, right? Nobody's going to call them out. They're leaders of the church.
You don't think that some of the leaders of our churches here in America and around the world don't need to be called out? You are sadly mistaken, right? Like shepherds. Caring only for themselves.
If you want God's blessing, give me $29.99 and I'll send you a napkin.
Like shepherds caring only for themselves. Clouds without water.
Clouds without water? So a cloud is a vapor, right? A cloud without water is smoke.
Chokes you out. Carried along by winds, autumn trees without fruit,
not singly dead, but doubly dead.
Uprooted, wild waves of the sea, churning up their own shameful deeds like dirty foam.
You ever look at the ocean foam here sometimes? It's really brown and gross, right?
Anyway,
this is what their deeds look like. Looks like that ocean foam. It's all gross and grody, right?
They're wandering stars.
You know what we call a, you know, they used to believe that a shooting star was a dying star, right? That it was dying. So,
wandering stars, they're dead. For the gloom of darkness has been reserved, for whom the gloom of darkness has been reserved forever.
You're going to be in darkness forever. You're in darkness now. You're not changing your ways. You're going to be in darkness forever.
So that's
really the context of a woe, right? So when we go through these eight woes, think of this context and go, oh my goodness, Jesus isn't always this nice, kind guy, all right? We're going to see that here, really.
So these are the people between the people and a right understanding of God, right?
It's somebody who's standing in the way of you coming to a right knowledge of who God is.
There are many like this in the New Testament, right? Paul calls some out by name.
Jesus calls some out.
in a lot of different places. And a lot of times he's calling out the false teachings of the Pharisees, saying, hey guys, don't listen to this. This is how you really see who God is. Right? You don't have to, you know, wash your hands 7 times to see who God is. Because you can be clean on the outside and dirty on the in. Right? We've got the Greeks. The Greeks kind of stand in the way sometimes. Paul uses the Greek teachings, the Greek philosophers, and he says, hey guys, your philosophers say this. Why don't you think of it this way? Right? You've got this unknown God. Why don't you think of him like this? This is who I'm here to tell you about, is this unknown God. Right? These are the Judaizers, right? Talk about people coming in. They're like, oh no, to believe in Jesus, you got to be circumcised. That you can't believe in Jesus without being circumcised. You got to become Jewish before you can believe in Jesus. Right? That's clearly not taught anywhere. This is a big one that Jesus confronts in the Pharisees, right? It's this teaching that gets them between the people and God, right? People and an understanding of who God is, right? And here he's going to give them 8 woes, right? We're going to go through them one by one. I'm not going to go just straight Bible verse through Bible verses all the way through and then go back through them. But instead, we're going to go through them. Here's the first one, Matthew 23 and verse 13. But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees. He doesn't just talk about the Pharisees, but the scribes and the Pharisees. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you shut the kingdom of heaven in front of people. For you do not enter it yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. You're standing in the way. You're acting as a door. Right? What he's saying here is these bad teachers, they're getting in the way of people seeing heaven. People seeing who God is. And the Pharisees are like, oh no, you walked one step beyond the legal limit. You can't come to church. That's work. You did work. Right? Think of Jesus, right? He heals a dude on the Sabbath and they're like, oh, that's blasphemy. He's like, dude, really? Healed him. Did you? Come on now. What's better? Right? Did I heal him? Or did I leave him lame? And they talk about a donkey in a ditch, right? You can save your donkey from the ditch on the Sabbath. That's not considered work. Right? So parallels there, right? That they're standing in the way. They're making extra rules, right? God gave them rules to follow, and then the Pharisees, what they did is they added a whole bunch of extra rules, buffers on the buffer, right? So, if it's 10 miles, right, they added a second buffer to it. No, you can't go over 5 miles. And then the next group would add another buffer. No, it's 2 miles. And then the next group would add another buffer. It's 1 mile. You better not travel 1 mile or you're doomed. You're not going anywhere, right? But that's not what God said, right? The original was 10 miles, right? So they're adding buffers on buffers on buffers to where the people can't even do anything. And that wasn't just Sabbath rules. That was their everyday life rules. They're adding all of these extra rules. They're not teaching the people properly. They're not giving them a proper understanding of who God is in the scriptures. Right? They're not teaching any of these things. They'll go in there, they'll read the scriptures, but they're not explaining to the people what it means. Right? We would call that exegesis, right? To exegete, to break down and to see what it actually means. But not only that, they weren't even living right. Right? They were kind of living the way they wanted to. I'm going to do this my way. They were Frank Sinatra type people, right? I did it my way. And none of that added up to the people seeing who God was, right? They weren't allowing entry. They were not allowing entry to people. They could just say, yeah, I don't like the way you look. The look on your face is just, yeah, go. Right? You can't be here. You ain't got to go home, but you can't stay here.
Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 15, he says, "Sober up morally and stop sinning, for some have no knowledge of God. I say this to your shame." Right? They were not doing this at all, right? And they didn't see how
them stopping doing what they were doing would help the people. And that's kind of what Jesus is getting at here is hey, you gotta stop. You gotta stop being who you're being. Right? Think back to the Old Testament, right? We got Eli, you know, he's Samuel's teacher, and Eli's kids are just running amok. Eli's not keeping anything in check. And God's like, "Fine. Wash my hands of you." Right? And then he realizes, "Oh, I've messed up," the instant Samuel starts getting the call, and he's like, "Yeah, just say yes, Lord. Your servant is listening. That'll talk." He's like, "Okay." Right? What Paul's trying to say here is that Christians were doing the same thing, right? Right? Especially in Corinth, right? Corinth is, they're a hot mess in Corinth, right? There's a church that I would compare the church in America to. It's probably Corinth, right? We're kind of not on point a lot of times in a lot of places. We're just kind of, you know, we've got pastors and evangelists and teachers who are, you know, they're not moral people. They're not acting morally. They're not acting rightly, right? And people are like, I can follow a secular teacher who does the same thing, right? So they don't know who God is because of it. That's fine.
They don't know who God is because of it. So Paul's saying that the Christians, they're having the same issue. Jesus is saying, Pharisees, you're having this issue, right? So the issue didn't go away just because Christ rose.
It continued. We need to look at ourselves and make sure that we're not in the way of people coming to know who God is, right?
Look at our lives. Do our lives reflect the gospel? Do our lives reflect who Jesus is? Do our lives show people that God is still here? He's still present. He's still listening. Still watching. Do our lives reflect that we are actually following God? Or do they reflect something else?
You know, and the other problem was that they themselves were not on their way to heaven, right?
Because they're not acting morally, because people can't see who God is through their lives, let alone through their teachings, you know, they're not on their way to heaven.
Right. They've twisted the scripture so badly that people, you know, for the people that they had lost what the scriptures actually meant. Right? That's that exegeting thing, right? We gotta figure out what it actually means. And not just what it means to us, but what did it mean to a first century Jew who is hearing Jesus speak, you know? What did it mean to a first century Greek who's listening to Paul when he's standing in the Areopagus, right? When he's using their poets, right? And, you know, I didn't intend to go in this direction, but Rachel sent me a video this morning of a guy from India. He's speaking and he's talking about music and rock and roll music. And he's like, "Rock and roll music is bad and blah, 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 blah." Can you picture Jesus using rock and roll music? Well, maybe you're misasking the question. Can I picture Jesus utilizing the art and literature of his time to show people who God is? Yes, yes I can. I can really picture Paul doing it, right? He does it two key spots. We see him quoting Greek philosophers and Greek poets, right? He quotes them. Why does he quote them? To show people who God is. That's why he quotes them. So, can we use secular things to show people who God is? Absolutely. And we should. Because that's part of evangelism. That's part of taking that good news out to people. You want to present it in a way that people will hear you, that they will listen to you. They're not always going to listen to the red-faced, leather-lunged preacher in the pulpit. They might listen to it in a rock song.
or from their favorite musician on stage. They might. And if that's the way they hear it, does that make them less of a Christian? Just because they came to believe it that way? And we know, you know, because we're sitting here, we understand the answer to that is no. But there are people who would have you believe that to be true. They're being Pharisees. They're standing in the way of people coming to know who God is. And it makes you wonder, do they even know themselves? The second woe. Whew. We're one quarter of the way through this and we're 15 minutes in. All right, good. We're on pace. Matthew 23:15. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you travel around on sea and land to make one proselyte, and when he becomes one, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves. What's a proselyte? So, a proselyte is a non-Jewish convert, right? It's somebody who's, you know, a Greek or a Roman or, you know, some other thing. Another word for it is God-fearer. That were fearers of God. They would be permitted into the outer portion of the temple, never into the inner portion, but into the outer portion of the temple. Right? Now, these people that were making proselytes, and the proselyte now, they think they know who God is. But they're learning from these Pharisees. So we can clearly see that they probably don't actually know who God is. Right? They weren't ever ensuring that they actually believed. And this was a big problem in America. Right? It's a big problem in America because you'd have things like huge conferences going on. Now, I have nothing wrong with huge conferences. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with them. The problem I have is that there's never follow-up after a huge conference where lots of people proclaimed and come to know Christ and nobody follows up to ensure that they're being taught. Right? Same thing's going on here, right? They're making these converts. They're not following up on it, right? This has led in our church, in our day, to a lot of anti-intellectualism, right? You're in the moment. You feel good at that time. And you just go with that feeling. I'm not saying the feelings are bad or feelings are wrong. What I am saying is that when that's all we have is this feeling, feelings change. They go to hither and fro, right? They go to and fro, right? If you're doing it just based on a feeling, you're probably not doing it right. That's emotionalism. That's not faith. That's not true belief in a biblical sense. That's just sensationalism, and it's garbage. And it's really had a negative impact on our church today. Jesus is telling us it had a big impact on the temple, on the Jewish believers, because it stood in the way of people coming to know who God was. But they felt like, hey, I'm now a proselyte. I'm a Jew. I'm just as good as being a Jew. So they were bound to keep the law, right? They're saying, I am now a Jew. I'm going to keep the law. Problem with that was, they were taught the law. They were taught the rules as the Pharisees would have them. And then, of course, you add your own buffer to the buffer to the buffer to the buffer. And now you've constrained yourself to, can I go next door? Can I break bread with my friends? Can I even go to the temple? I live 0.1 miles too far from the temple to be able to walk to it without it being considered work. Can I go to the temple still? On Sabbath? Heaven forbid, or I might sin. See why this is a problem? Right? They're being taught the interpretation of the law, which is really the interpretation of an interpretation of an interpretation of the law with buffers being added in. And then, of course, you're adding your own buffer to make sure that you're not doing anything wrong to where you're just afraid to move. They're ruling by fear. Right. They're making them accountable to God and then proclaiming that they are followers of the law. they have no clue what God even said. Right? They're teaching them how to say clever Hebrew sayings, right? The cutesy stuff, right? Do the prayer, take the knee, right? Recite the recitation of the day, right? Say your Hail Mary and go on about your business. Wait, oh, there are churches like that. The Catholic Church. They do the same thing. Huh?
You got a
German flag too. So they're making him twice the son of hell, right? Because they were already going there because they refused to believe in who God was. Now, they really don't even know who God is, even though they claim to know who God is. And they're leading others astray because they're like, hey, guys, this is a great religion. Come follow it. Because if you've got the truth, why wouldn't you tell somebody, right? Oh, we've got plenty of people doing that in the church. They don't know who God is. And Paul says, that is to your shame. Because Paul had taught them properly. Because they did know who God was in Corinth. Right? He taught them properly. He made sure there was good teachers in place. He stayed there for 18 months to make sure they had good teachings. And still, Corinth, we end up with big hot mess. Say what?
Woe number three.
Now to woe number three. That one didn't take 15 minutes like the first one. All right. Matthew 23, 16 to 22. This is a long one, but it says a lot. Woe to you, blind guides, who say, whoever swears by the temple, that is nothing. But whoever swears by the gold of the temple is obligated. You fools and blind men. Which is more important, the gold or the temple that sanctified the gold? And you say, whoever swears by the altar, that is nothing. But whoever swears by the offering that is on it is obligated. You blind men. Which is more important, the offering or the altar that sanctifies the offering? Therefore, the one who swears by the altar swears both by the altar and by everything on it. The one who swears by the temple swears by both the temple and by him who dwells in it. And the one who swears by heaven swears both by the throne of God and by him who sits upon it. Wow. A lot in that one. We're warned multiple times not to swear by anything because we can't change it. Right? This is non-negotiable. You swear by something, you better hold to it. We need to be sure that we're not swearing oaths like they're doing, right? And really need to be sure we're not swearing oaths by the money, right? The money is not supposed to drive us in any way, shape, or form in the church. Jesus doesn't speak highly of money, the love of money at least, right? Nor does Paul, right? And they would swear by Yahweh, by God. God is my witness, right? We've heard that. Right? It's the same thing. Doing it in our daily lives. Right? So help me, I swear, I will.
Really?
The problem was their focus was all wrong. Right? They thought what was more important was the stuff. The stuff of God is more important than God himself. They're making their oaths to the stuff. Not to God. What use is that? It's useless. It's worthless.
It's empty. Right?
You know, we would agree that God's more important than stuff. Right? But his house was being misused by the Jewish leaders. And that's a key thing to recognize here, right? Is that they're misusing the house of God. This is a place where God has said, I dwell here. Right? He's told them, I dwell here. In the Holy of Holies. And they're misusing it. Right? We see that with the whip and the you know, turning the tables and all that, right? We see that Jesus is ticked off that they're misusing the house of God. That's really what that's about. Same thing here, right? They're misusing the house of God. This is the same anger that he had at that time. They're more worried about the money coming in than they were about who God was, right? Hey, we're going to meet this month's quota of money, right? And, you know, I don't like talk about money. not in my daily life, not in the pulpit, not anywhere, right? There are some people, they make their living talking about money from the pulpit. That's a problem. We should see that as a big problem. The church as a whole should see that as a big problem. If somebody is talking about nothing but money, welfare, wellness, you know, it'll be good for you if you do this, probably need to check to see whether or not they fall under this. All right? Priorities were off. And we see that, you know, plenty in the church here today. You know, we see that the priorities are, they're wrong. They're wrong-minded. They're wrong-headed, right? You know, our priorities, they sometimes go asunder, right? They go to the wrong thing. We're thinking about, you know, the laundry we got to do tomorrow instead of thinking about what's going on, you know, in church. You know, our priorities get twisted. It wouldn't be the first time that it happened, right? Guess what? When we do it, it won't be the last. We got to make sure that when we are here worshiping God, that we are keeping our eyes on the prize, and that is on God, keeping our focus on Him, right? There are churches that build their theology around this wrong-minded misprioritization of God, right? Oh, the people come first, or this comes first, or that comes first. You know, is feeding the poor a good thing? Yes. Did Jesus feed the poor? Yes. Did Jesus feed people in the church, or at, you know, as he's like talking about things of God? Yes. What did he always do first? Gave the gospel. The gospel always came first, right? Think of the Sermon on the Mount, right? At the end of it, he's like, whoa, we got any food? These people been here a minute, you know. They probably need to eat. He's probably been going for a while. He's like, yeah, we probably need to eat at some point. And then we get the five and the two, right? Five loaves, two fish, right? Thousands fed, right? It's always an afterthought to him. Does he do it? Yes. But it comes after talking about who God is. What's our priority in the church? Speaking about who God is. Hosea, you know, the Jews, this wasn't the first time they'd been accused of having their priorities mistaken, right? They consistently did. Their priorities were consistently hosed. Right? Hosea 6 and 6, he says, "For I desire loyalty rather than sacrifice. For the knowledge of God, and the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings." God doesn't care about our offerings. He wants our worship. He wants our adoration. That's what God really wants. He's not worried about the money. Right? I always kind of assumed that, you know, running a church, if I need the money, it'll show up. There was a guy, George Mueller, back in the 1800s. He ran an orphanage that way. Never once asked for money. Never. Not once. And not once did the kids go without. Right? There would be, you know, they'd be running low on bread, and the baker would say, "Hey, I baked a bunch of loaves that didn't come out quite right. Do you want them?" And give him, like, a bunch of loaves of bread. And voila, he's got bread. You know, there was an axle broke on a milk carriage one day. And they'd been asking for milk. They'd been asking God to bring them milk. And it broke right outside of the orphanage. And it was all going to spoil before it was able to be delivered. And he was like, "Hey, do you want this?" Gave him a whole bunch of milk. Right? So, I have never I guess my thinking is I don't, that's why we don't pass a plate here, right? I don't do it. I refuse. There are people within our group of churches who would like for me to. They're like, you need to do this. And I'm like, no, I won't. Right? Because there's time and place for it, and it's not here. Not during the worship of God. Right? God doesn't desire our sacrifice. He wants our loyalty. Right? He doesn't want our burnt offerings. He wants us to come to a knowledge of who he is. And the Pharisees were standing in the way of that. Who do we swear by? No. Do we swear by us? No. I swear on my life. No. Can't change the number of hairs on our head. We can't do it. Guess what? Can't change the color. I mean, I can dye it, but it doesn't change the actual color of my hair, right? So, why are we trying to change everything? Are we worried about doing the right thing or just about doing our thing? Right? Do we want to do this the right way or do we want to do it our way? Because I assure you, the Pharisees, they wouldn't do it their way. They were having their cake, they were eating it too, you know. And, you know, here's one of the parts where it says, don't swear by anything, right? Let your yes be yes and your no be no. That's it. That's what we got to do. That's what we are called to do, right? Again, you have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. But I say to you, take no oath at all, neither by heaven, for it is the throne of God, nor by earth, for it is the footstool of his feet, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you take an oath by your head, for you cannot make a single hair white or black. But make sure your statement is yes, or no is no. Anything beyond these is of evil origin. When we go beyond it, right? There's a movie, it's called Second Chance. It's about a small church in, the South somewhere, but it's a big city. Right, there's a big church in a big city, and there's a little church on the outskirts of a big city, right, in more of the hood, if you would. And, you know, the son of the pastor of the big church goes to work for the pastor of the little church, and he's like, you know, millions have come to faith, you know, through the work of my father's done in you know, Africa and Asia and all this. And he's like... It's not a game. Nobody's keeping score, right? The question isn't, you know, how many converts are we making? It's, how's our faith? Is it growing or is it shrinking? If it's shrinking, we're doing it wrong, right? How's our knowledge of who God is? Is it getting better? Is it getting worse, right? You know, God's called us to do this away. And I guess my thing is I want to do it that way, you know. And when we finish the race, the goal is always to hear, "Well done, my good and faithful servant," because that's what we want to hear. Right? If we swear by something, we're wrong-minded. We need to look at the context of what we're doing, and instead just say yes or no, and let our yes stand for actual yes, right? Let our no stand for actually no. And not flip-floppy, right? No, there we go. The next woe. We're on to the fourth woe. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites! For you tithe mint and dill and cumin, and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law. Justice, mercy, faithfulness. But these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others, you blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. It's talking about the law, right? We're going to kind of get into that. So, you know, when he's talking about justice, this is the day of justice, right? You guys are so focused on, you know, I need to appease the people. That's what he's really talking about, you know. I need to make it smell good, taste good, right? Cumin, mint, dill. According, you know, here's Matthew 12, he says, "Behold my servant, whom I've chosen, my beloved in whom my soul delights. I will put my spirit upon him, and he will proclaim justice to the Gentiles." Right? To the Gentiles, wait. Jews would not have stood for that a whole lot, right? You know, Gentiles were those who weren't God-fearers. They weren't proselytes. They were non-Jews. And here Jesus is saying, you know, this is what God's calling out. You know, he's citing the Old Testament. Jesus came to bring justice. Right? We look for this justice now in our culture, in our society. We want our justice now, and we want it done our way. Not the right way. We want it done our way. I almost said we want it done now and we want it done right, but we don't even care if it's right. We want our justice now. Who cares if it's right? This is something they were neglecting in the church in the first century, in the temple in the first century, right? It's justice. They didn't care about justice. I want whatever's going to get this shut up and out of my way. Jesus came to bring justice. Even to the Gentiles, not just to the Jews, right? That's what this is about. Right? I will put my spirit upon him, and he will proclaim justice to the Gentiles. Proclaim what this heavenly justice looks like, even to Gentiles. Mercy. Mercy or compassion, right? You know, there's people who run compassion ministries, right? We kind of do that here. We've got clothing closet. You know, you got soup kitchens and you know, churches start hospitals. That's kind of the number one starter of hospitals is large religious organizations, right? But these people, they weren't being compassionate. They weren't. There was no compassion in them. There was no mercy. That's the reason for this woe, right? They were not compassionate towards the people. They were compassionate towards getting what they wanted. Right? They would give you lip service. Oh, yeah. So long as things were going to go their way afterwards. Leaders were looking for strict adherence to the law rather than for a love to God. Right? He's like, hey, guys, stop talking about the law all the time. Let's talk about who God is. Let's talk about how to love God. What's that really look like? Who's it really for? And faithfulness, right? That's that trust, right? Trusting in God. Jesus is talking about they need to trust in God. They weren't trusting in him. They were trying to make things done their own way, right? Their justice wasn't right. Their mercy wasn't right. Their faith wasn't right. It was kind of, I'm going to do this how I want to. And he's like, hey, we got to watch that, right? All of these things, you know, loving God, being just, you know, trusting in who God was, these were all like foreign concepts to the Pharisees. They didn't believe any of this. And Jesus is like, this is what God wants. He wants, you know, compassion, faithfulness, justice. Not what you guys do. The next one says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites. Again, he likes to call them hypocrites. He calls them hypocrites a lot. He's not being nice. Right? What happened to nice Jesus? You don't really see him a whole lot. People talk about how wonderful and nice Jesus was. You know, as we've gone through the book of Matthew, right, we see all the times he's talking about the false teachers. It's pretty much all but four chapters in the book of Matthew, or five maybe. Where he doesn't talk about false teachers and false teachings, right? This is another one, right? For you clean the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside they're full of robbery and self-indulgence. Right? You blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and the dish, so that the outside of it may also become clean. It's talking about ceremonial washing, right? And we're going to see that really in the next woe as well, right? They're washing the outside. They looked good. Coming to church, they look good, right? They're in the suit and tie. They're doing what looks right. They'd wear their expensive clothes. They'd, you know, garments would be just so. They would primp and prim and proper and all of that. And, you know,
But on the inside, these guys, they were stealing from God. They're fleecing the flock. But this is what prosperity preachers do today. You ever see a prosperity preacher not wearing a $15,000 suit? No. They've all got on the really expensive Gucci coat and Gucci pants and, you know, Ralph Lauren shirt, you know, whatever, right? They've got on the super nice-looking, super expensive-looking coat and pants and shirt and tie and shoes. But they're just fleecing the flock. They're not there to fill you. They're not there to give you knowledge of who God is. They're washing the outside of the cup. They look good. The inside's rotten. Same thing here, right? Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, again, with the hypocrites. For you are like whitewashed tombs. Look good on the outside. What's going on the inside? Which on the outside appears beautiful, but inside, they're full of dead men's bones and uncleanness, right? We'll talk about spiritual uncleanness. That's uncleanness, right? Don't touch a dead body. That was part of the cleanliness law. He's like, inside you guys are dead. And dying. You're decaying. Right? So you too outwardly appear righteous to people, but inwardly you're full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Right? It looks clean, right? You can go through, like, Arlington National Cemetery, right? All of the tombstones look pristine, and they're beautiful, and it's really serene place. It used to be a plantation. It looks clean. It looks great. Right? Still contains, you know, on the inside, not silver and gold. Silver and gold aren't buried under there. I mean, some might have, like, gold cufflinks or something, right? But, you know, that's not what's buried under there. What's buried under there? Some dead person. They're decayed or decaying. It's death. Right. This is the life of the Pharisees, right? You know, they're dead on the inside. They're not preaching anything that would give life to people. Well, you're going to die, and who cares after that? That's what they're preaching. Jesus talked a great deal about giving new life, right? This is the kind, gentle Jesus, right? He's talking about this new life, except when he says nobody can have it except for those who believe in me. That's not kind, gentle Jesus by our standards today, right? He talked a great deal about giving us new life. This was the purpose Jesus came. This is why we have the baby in the manger that we celebrate every year, because he came to give us new life. The real celebration happened when the grave was empty, right? That's when the real celebration happens, right? Religious leaders, they weren't alive because the law couldn't do that for them. If all you are taught is the you shall not, you shall not, you shall not, you shall not, and you're never taught to love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, soul, your strength, which, by the way, is not just a New Testament thing. That's also in the Old Testament, right? They're not ever taught that. They're taught the law. That's it. Paul says that the law just serves as a way to see our sin, not as a way to come away from it. Right? There needs to be some kind of regeneration in that. And they weren't doing it. So which are we? Are we the hypocrites? Are we alive on the outside and dead on the inside? Right? Or are we in new life? Jesus makes it clear that he desires us to live what he preached. Right? Live what he preached. Right? There is new life. It comes from this. It comes from knowing who Christ is and worshiping him as God. That's it. It's clear. The New Testament is very clear on this. Right? Is that what we're doing? Is that who we are? Or are we more like Pharisees? We look good, but we're dead on the inside. Right? And another one. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, for you build the tombs for the prophets and decorate the monuments that are righteous and say, if we'd been living in the days of our fathers,
We would not have been partners with them in shedding the blood of the prophets. Really?
So you testify against yourselves that you are the sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up, then, the measure of the guilt of your fathers. You snakes! You brood of vipers! You offspring of vipers! How will you escape the sentence of hell?
I said, hey, if we were living when our forefathers did, we wouldn't have murdered the prophets. And you know what? Every group ever alive said that, right? Oh, if we were alive when Cain was around, we wouldn't have killed his brother. We wouldn't have killed Abel. We wouldn't have killed this guy. We wouldn't have killed that guy. We wouldn't have... And on down the line, and all the prophets continued to get persecuted by the Jewish people, murdered, persecuted, murdered, persecuted, murdered. On and on and on and on. John the Baptist, persecuted, murdered. Jesus, persecuted, murdered, rose again. Right? Killing of the prophets. Which of the prophets did your fathers not persecute? This is Stephen, right? Stephen's being tried. He's on trial here for his life. For blasphemy. And he says, which of the prophets did your fathers not persecute? Hey, you're here doing it to me. Which ones did your dad, did your forefathers not do this to? Hey? It killed those who had previously announced the coming of the righteous one. It killed them. And you have now become betrayers and murderers of him. You guys did this. Not me. You did it. You who received the law as ordained by angels and yet did not keep it. You know who's in the crowd here? It's funny. Paul. Paul is. Who got beat up by the Jews less than Paul? Most people would fall into that category. Jews did not like him because he was one of them and then he wasn't. Stephen's talking to Paul. Right. He's asking for them to name one prophet who wasn't persecuted for what he brought to the table. Just name one. Drop a name. And he was pretty safe in assuming that there were none. And as of his time, still weren't. And he would be killed moments later, just like the prophets he had spoken of. Who were those who were bringing the news of the righteous one? Because that's really what it's all about, right? And they keep doing it, right? They kept doing it, right? Make sure that none of you suffers as a murderer or thief or evildoer or troublesome meddler. But if anyone suffers as a Christian, he is not to be ashamed, but is to glorify God in this name. For it is time for judgment to begin with the household of God. And if it begins with us first, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of God? 1 Peter 4:15-17, right? Let's be okay with suffering for Christ. Not just okay with it, right? Paul says to rejoice in it. As he's chained in a prison in Rome, he's saying, rejoice in your sufferings. Really, Paul? Rejoice with great joy. Read the book of Philippians, right? The entire thing is about rejoicing in who God is and who Christ is. Now think of it in context. Paul's chained in a jail, in like a dungeon, basically, in Rome as he's writing it. You think you got it rough. Paul's got you beat on that one, I'm pretty sure. You know, the story of Martin Luther. Martin Luther, he suffered from manic depressiveness almost. It was definitely depression, right? He suffered off and on from depression for years and years and years and years because, one, I think it's just kind of who he was. Kind of see it in his in the early writings about him, about his constant just. I'm not any good, I'm blah, 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 but he suffered from depression later in life, largely because his friends were all getting killed. And he wasn't. And he saw this as a problem. He's like, am I doing something wrong? Because they're killing everybody else. All they did was excommunicate me. Right? So he felt that he wasn't suffering enough. Maybe I'm not going against the Catholic Church enough, right? He'd been excommunicated, right? They wanted to kill him. Question. Yeah.
Why were his friends getting killed?
The same reason that he felt he should have been killed. They were all killed for...
They're all just rebelling against...
Yeah, they're rebelling against Catholic Church. You see him burned alive. You see him being, buried alive. There's lots of that going on back then. But... they were translating the Bible into languages that were not Latin, that were not Greek, and this was a big no-no, right? They killed Wycliffe for doing the same thing in England, right? Only that was in the 1400s. He's trying to translate the Bible into English, and he did, and they burned him at the stake for it. It's kind of witchcraft or something like that. It's heresy is what they called it, but... They burned him as a heretic, right? These guys all suffered for the gospel, right? Are we okay with suffering or do we whine about it? Oh, I don't know. When somebody gives me half of a peace sign on the street, I'm pretty excited. I'm like, yeah, right, I like it. You don't like me. Good. And that's the worst suffering that we get for the gospel in America. It really is. Somebody speaking out against us. If that's the worst you get, you ain't being chained in some prison in Rome, right? You're not being beheaded. You're not being burned at the stake. Somebody's talking bad about you. Ooh, right? But then Jesus says something that has confounded historians forever. He curses. Oh my goodness, Jesus used bad words? How rude, right? We think of Jesus as saying all these nice things, but clearly he didn't. Right? He refers to them as children of snakes. We use a similar phrase in our language. Think about it for a second. It'll come to mind. Right? John the Baptist said the same thing to these leaders, and he was considered to be a brusque individual. Right? Camel hair, honey, locusts, Not considered to be the most polite of individuals. He wasn't somebody you're inviting over for dinner. Right? Paul wasn't always polite. Jesus most certainly was not always polite. And right here, definitely not being polite. But sometimes we have to speak a little more harshly about things. There's a guy I like to watch. His name's David Wood. He's a philosopher. He does a lot of anti-Islam stuff. He's also done some anti-atheist debates, right? Debates with atheists. But some people don't like him because he's off color at times. Now, he's got kind of a history, a weird history. But they don't like him because he speaks in an off-color manner. Jesus kind of spoke in an off-colored manner sometimes. So did Paul, so did Peter, so did, you got a picture, in Norfolk back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, even into the 80s, there were signs on people's yards that would say, sailors and dogs keep off the grass, right? Now you got to imagine, this has been a thing for all of eternity, right? Sailors have not been the highest caliber individuals. Who are most of the... What's the profession of most of the disciples? They're fishermen. They're sailors. They're crass. We shouldn't be shocked when somebody is crass. Because guess what? Jesus wasn't always nice. Some people have said that about popular pastors in America. I don't like him because he's crass. And who cares? Is his message getting across? Sometimes Jesus did, right? But he's like, you brood of vipers. You sons of snakes. You've not been doing this right. Right? You're not keeping the gospel. You're not keeping what the law says. You're not obeying the prophets. You're killing them. Right? And, question is, what's their faith in? Their faith wasn't in God, obviously. It's in themselves, right? It's in them. It's in their rules. But they're not looking at the grace of God. They're not looking at justice and mercy, right? They're not looking at justice and mercy. Right? We have to keep our eyes firmly fixed on Christ. That's what the real, takeaway from this is. Is our faith needs to be firmly planted in God, right? We need to make sure that we're looking at people, teachers, speakers who, can give us a better understanding of who God is, right? And that is our big key, is knowing God rightly. And that's what Jesus is saying the Pharisees aren't doing, is not only do they not know who God is, but they're keeping the people from knowing who God is, right? And you think back to those woes, and there are these hidden reefs at your love feasts, right? Some of them are teachers that are being the hidden reefs at love feasts, right? That's the problem. That's a big problem in our church today. As big as it was, if not bigger, than it was in the first century. Well, let's pray.